From KUAR News in Little Rock, this is a look at Arkansas news, politics, and more. Coming up, Planned Parenthood challenges a cut in state funding, a legislative committee subpoenas a federal Medicaid official, preparations for a major inspection of Arkansas Nuclear One, which is ranked among the worst in the nation, and concerns over education. I'm Michael Heplin. I'll be joined by Jacob Kaufman, Sarah Weitz-Kotacek, and Chris Hickey. That's all coming up on KUAR's Weekend Review. Planned Parenthood is asking a federal judge for a temporary injunction to stop the cancellation of its Medicaid contract with the state of Arkansas. Judge Christine Baker is expected to issue a written order soon on whether to grant that. She didn't indicate during a hearing on Thursday when she will make a ruling, but KUAR's Sarah Weitz-Kotacek was in the federal courtroom for the hearing. First, Sarah, set up a little bit of this hearing and what Planned Parenthood had to say.
Planned Parenthood is suing the state for canceling its Medicaid contract. Governor Asa Hutchinson asked DHS to cancel the contract last month after several months of concern about some videos that had been released by a pro-life group that were edited and showed, secretly recorded videos, showed Planned Parenthood staff discussing fetal tissue donation. And this has caused a national political backlash against Planned Parenthood, which we heard a lot about this week. So in Arkansas, the judge was asked to issue a temporary restraining order, temporary injunction to stop the cancellation while the case is underway to decide whether it should in fact be canceled.
And was there discussion specifically about these videos during the hearing?
Well, the state attorneys brought up the videos as a basis for an ethical concern to cancel the contract, and the judge was considering whether there would be undue harm to either Medicaid patients. There are 4,400 currently receiving care from Planned Parenthood in this state right now, or to Planned Parenthood itself financially, if they were to be canceled while she was deciding on the case. So the state was saying, legally, its argument was that it had a basis to make the determination to cancel the contract, and that its ethical concerns about those videos were a part of its decision-making privilege to consider.
And what did attorneys for Planned Parenthood argue?
Well, they tried to disassociate from Planned Parenthood, the national organization, and say that Planned Parenthood of the Heartland is an affiliate of Planned Parenthood, and while other affiliates, namely two they mentioned around the country, currently donate fetal tissue, that's not an issue in Arkansas. The Planned Parenthood of the Heartland doesn't perform surgical abortions and doesn't deal with fetal tissue, and that's actually not legal here. So it's not a situation, they said, where any of the issues that the state is worried about are actually happening.
And Governor Asa Hutchinson issued this order on August 14th to stop funding for Planned Parenthood within 30 days. It will actually begin affecting people in Arkansas this coming Monday. Did the judge express any interest in or say anything to the effect of making a decision quickly, given that this is about to begin having ramifications?
Both sides asked her to make a decision yesterday, on Thursday, and she said that she wanted time to review all the documents that had just been submitted and that she wanted to follow her procedures. Planned Parenthood was asking her to make a decision by Monday so there wouldn't be any lapse, and their concern is that their patients won't know whether they have Medicaid coverage anymore. And it's not clear on either side. There wasn't really clear information about whether the services that Planned Parenthood provides would be covered throughout the state and whether patients would have to go to multiple providers to get the same services and what kind of difficulties that might present to Medicaid patients who are making below poverty wages.
And Jacob?
At any point did the state argue what law was actually violated? They've said that the videos made them uncomfortable, that numerous lawmakers have said they're anti-abortion, but have they ever said what law was violated in this case?
The state didn't say that any law was violated, but they talked about the law specifying specifically under what conditions they could issue a contract and when they could decide to revoke it. And so they said that the legal issue was rather what their rights were, not that there had been any actual legal violation. And the judge referenced other cases, similar cases, where the ruling had been about actual Medicaid fraud and where wrongdoing had been, you know, illegal acts had occurred, and that is not the case here.
And in a press release that the governor's office put out on August 14th, I can read part of this where it says, it is apparent after the recent revelations of the actions by Planned Parenthood that this organization does not represent the values of the people of our state, and Arkansas is better served by terminating any and all existing contracts with them.
Yeah, the attorneys for the state also said, we're democratically elected government and we have the right to represent the people and to represent their political views, and that's our duty and that's our basis for defending this decision in court.
Well, on another Medicaid-related matter, this week Arkansas lawmakers in a legislative committee decided to subpoena a federal Medicaid official about the state's Medicaid enrollment and eligibility system contracts. Jacob, you were at that committee meeting on Wednesday. What's the state looking at? What does it seem like lawmakers are really wanting to get at?
What lawmakers are really trying to get at is we've heard one version of what's going on with the state's Medicaid system from state-level officials at the Department of Human Services, and all of this has been influenced by a combination of state players and federal players, so they really want to hear from the Centers for Medicaid and Medicaid Services, CMS, to see if there's any difference in the versions of stories being told by state and federal officials. But this Medicaid mess just continues to roll on, and this is separate than the income verification process that we've covered in previous podcasts pretty extensively. This is about a new computer system for initial applicants and enrollment. It hasn't been working right. It's nearly $100 million over budget, started in 2013. There's supposedly $30 million in tech upgrades that simply don't work. And we're replacing a 25-year-old system in terms of getting people enrolled initially in Medicaid. So the question all along has been where to place the blame. And lawmakers at the Joint Performance Review Committee this week unanimously voted to issue a subpoena against the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, in particular one person, Jessica Kahn. And here's the chair of that committee, State Representative Kim Hammer from Benton.
We're communicating to the federal government, we want you here before us. Whether or not the federal government responds to that is their choice. But one thing I want to have at the conclusion of this, which we hope to bring this in by October, is that we will have, as a committee, done everything within our powers. Whether people respond to that or not is their choice. If they want to be accountable or be silent, that's their decision.
And so Kim Hammer, he said that he sent several emails to Jessica Kahn, who's the director of data and systems groups for federal Medicaid officials. And he said he's always gotten really short one-sentences responses saying, I've received your request and thank you. And on the other hand, we've had the governor's office routinely say that federal officials in regard to things like the private option are extremely communicative and helpful and willing to hear the state side about this. But the next question after we have the subpoena power from Kim Hammer is, how much power does he really have as a state legislator to compel any federal official to show up? And it turns out not much.
Our ability to enforce her coming is limited to the state line. Unfortunately, we don't have that capability to force her or hold her accountable, but I would hope that with Noridian and Northrop Grumman voluntarily being willing to come as private sector, I would expect nothing less out of the federal government to come and make themselves available too.
And he mentioned Noridian and Northrop Grumman, and those are two private companies that have been involved with this in addition to the State Department of Human Services and federal Medicaid officials. And they've since said that they will come voluntarily and testify. So Kim Hammer said, we don't need to issue those subpoenas anymore since they'll come here. But the consequence of all this in the meantime is that thousands of new applicants, perhaps, including for newborns straight out of the hospital, have not had their Medicaid processed initially. And that's true of some people actually in this radio station who've said that's happened to them.
Well, one interesting thing here is that a lot of times when people go before legislative committees, they're not put under oath, whereas in this case, that's what they're wanting. It suggests there's something bigger, perhaps some kind of case to be made, or at least there's something firmer that lawmakers are wanting to get.
And it's certainly, anytime we talk about Medicaid or the federal government and healthcare, it's a high stakes issue, especially for the Republican-controlled Arkansas legislature. And at the state level, Chris knows a little bit about this. There actually someone was on their way out because of this today.
Yeah, Richard Wyatt, the chief information officer of the State Department of Human Services, actually submitted his resignation this week. The Arkansas Times just reported that, confirmed it. And that also results from the problems in the computer system at DHS. And he's been grilled a lot in committee hearings with legislators as well. And so it'll be interesting to see if he's the only one or if there'll be some kind of structural change in the administration of DHS as a result of this.
Any idea when we'll know whether or not we'll get this testimony?
The next meeting is in early October, and there should be representatives from Noridian and Northrop Grumman there. Is for CMS and Jessica Kahn, the federal government, they're under absolutely no obligation to come. The state cannot compel them with a subpoena to come here. Theoretically, Kim Hammer said if Jessica Kahn was traveling through Arkansas, maybe they could stop her on that day. But we'll see. There might be some sort of response that comes out of the federal government because of this sort of extraordinary move.
And Jessica Kahn is based in Washington?
I believe so, at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
This week, a 51-year-old power plant in East Arkansas was brought down in a series of implosions. The Robert E. Ritchie Power Plant in Helena, West Helena, was destroyed Thursday as Entergy Arkansas is moving forward with modernizing its electricity-generating facilities. The plant's boiler and a 450-foot emission stack were safely brought to the ground. That plant was officially retired in 2013. Meanwhile, one of the main facilities used by Entergy Arkansas is Arkansas Nuclear One, which is among the poorest rated nuclear facilities in the country. KUAR's Chris Hickey, you spoke with several officials, both federal regulators as well as officials with Entergy, about what they're doing to hopefully improve things there at this plant.
Yeah, right. So Entergy officials and officials with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission were meeting this week to discuss an upcoming inspection that's happening next year. It's going to be a really major inspection. A guy from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission told me it's going to involve 3,000 man hours of work divided among about 24 regulatory employees. And Entergy staff were basically briefing the NRC people on what they're doing to prepare for this. Now, this all goes back to an incident in 2013, in late March of 2013. A generator stator, about 500-ton generator stator, which is kind of a large turbine kind of thing, fell when it was being moved by several workers. It fell and injured several workers and killed one man, unfortunately and tragically. And this led to the plant getting increased oversight from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. At the time of this happening, it was kind of overshadowed in the news by another incident involving energy infrastructure in America. The Mayflower Pegasus pipeline burst that same weekend, so a lot of attention in the media was devoted to that. However, at the time, Entergy said, and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission said, this accident did not seriously infringe upon the plant's ability to produce power with its nuclear reactors. It didn't infringe upon the safety of the nuclear reactors themselves. There are two units there at Arkansas Nuclear One in Russellville. So this accident began a process of increased oversight from the NRC. They've been doing regular inspections there for the last 2 years, about every couple of months. The plant was moved into this area called Column 4, which is a rating system the NRC uses to kind of determine the safety characteristics of the plant. Column 4 is just one step above Column 5, which requires a complete plant shutdown. Now, at this inspection coming up next year, like I said, 3,000 hours of work divided among 24 employees. One of the reasons why the plant was moved into Column 4 is because at the time of the accident, the generator not only injured some workers, but it also damaged a lot of the infrastructure in the plant, and it caused a lot of flooding. And here's Victor Drix. He's a spokesman for the NRC, talking a little bit about, you know, what exactly happened.
It damaged some firefighting equipment and caused thousands of gallons of water to pour throughout the plant, and water seeped into areas where it shouldn't have been able to seep into. And as a result of that event, both the NRC and the licensee conducted very extensive inspections and identified problems with some of the flood protection features. They include floor seals, seals that are designed to make electrical cable conduits waterproof, and some hatches where water was able to enter areas where it shouldn't be.
And Drix went on to say that the NRC has confidence in Entergy to operate the plant safely. It's just these kind of lingering structural deficiencies that are at issue and that need to be corrected. I also spoke with Sarah Millard. She's with Arkansas Nuclear One. And she talked a little bit about the scope of this inspection.
This inspection will be much more robust. The scope will be so much larger than inspections that we've had in the past and our typical inspections that we normally have. I can't say that it'll be any more rigorous because all of the inspections performed by the NRC are always very rigorous and thorough, but like I said, it'll be a much larger scope, and they'll be coming in. They'll be reviewing, like I said before, our implementation of our corrective actions.
And Millard said that Entergy has spent about 25,000 hours of assessments and reviews of their infrastructure capabilities since the accident. It's interesting, Entergy operates about 10 plants across the United States. This one, Arkansas Nuclear One, is in Column 4, the poorest rating, which is shared by the Pilgrim Nuclear Plant in Massachusetts, which was moved there a couple months ago as well. And Drix said about 80 to 85% of the nuclear plants across the country are in Column 1, which require only a baseline level of inspection. And there are about a little over 70 plants in the United States. And none have been built since, 30 years ago. And one could surmise that this is an indication of America's aging nuclear plants. There have been a couple that have closed in recent years. But it's hard to say. It seems like the regulatory process is pretty robust. And eventually, the NRC will issue its corrective action order to instruct Entergy into exactly how to get out of Column 4. But we'll find that out next year.
There was a ceremony on Thursday where four teachers were named as finalists for Arkansas Teacher of the Year. The governor, Asa Hutchinson, as well as Education Commissioner Johnny Key, took part and had praise for those who were in the profession. But Jacob, you covered this event, and it comes at a time when there are a lot of changes happening in education, and a lot of teachers and educators are expressing concerns about the direction, especially from this Republican governor and his administration.
Yeah, there's definitely, if you talk to some of the teachers there, some of the people that represent teachers, there's a lot of division among what's going on in the traditional education system as we've known in the past few decades. But first, let's look at those four teachers that got the award, and that was the occasion for this gathering. There's a field of 15 regional finalists. They selected four at the announcement at the Capitol: Megan Abels from Stuttgart, Brenda Gallagher from Nashville, Stephanie Goodman from Hot Springs, and Michael Rogers from Siloam Springs. But throughout the remarks at the Capitol ceremony, hosted, as you said, by the governor and education commissioner, Johnny Key, they really focused on teaching being important because it leads to economic growth later on. In particular, the governor had praise for STEM fields in things like computer coding.
While I focus on economic development, we all know that you cannot achieve the results that we want in Arkansas in terms of fostering economic development and job creation without being successful in education.
And the governor, while he focused on the economic reasons for why we should promote teaching, he also had some fond personal remembrances of an algebra teacher that pushed him one time when he wasn't interested in the subject. And Education Commissioner Johnny Key echoed a lot of those things that the governor said, but he also made sure to say that teaching is a good family value. We need to make it an important value system in Arkansas to value things like teaching and education. And afterward, he said that while the Department of Education is, of course, working on programs and processes to better education, in particular places like the Little Rock School District, it was a good reminder to him that ultimately good teaching is an important part of any growth.
These are the teachers who happen to be recognized today, but we know there are other teachers out there doing as important work. That's what it's going to take. I mean, it's not going to take a program out of the Department of Education or out of the legislature. It's what happens in the classroom. It's what happens in the school.
And afterward, I spoke with the president of the Arkansas Education Association, the state's largest teachers union, Brenda Robinson, and she said she appreciated the kind words from the governor and the education commissioner, and she believes they were being genuine, but she also felt like there's some disrespect coming out of this administration in the forms of teachers losing some decades-old authority, especially in Little Rock, in regards to losing some bargaining rights for their union.
She's sad that school board or, you know, the State Department of Education would, you know, want to silence the voices of educators and, you know, not give them their collective bargaining rights. You know, I come from a local who lost their bargaining rights as well, Pulaski County School District. You know, I just kind of know the feeling, and it kind of just diminishes to me that honor and that respect.
And of the 15 finalists that were there that day, they ended up selecting four. One of the 15 was from Little Rock. He's the only one from Little Rock, Spencer Sutterfield from Parkview Arts and Science Magnet, my former high school. And he appreciated the talk about STEM, and he said that it's, of course, important, and Parkview does do sciences, but he's a theater arts teacher and a drama teacher, and he said, don't forget about the arts.
I think that Parkview is an ideal school because it's a school that focuses on science and STEM technology as well as the arts. And I really believe it's the fusion of the arts and the sciences together that creates what some call STEAM, and it's the STEAM that pushes people into technological advances with also a creative edge. So Apple Corporation would be a perfect example of an organization that has utilized both art and artistry and technology.
But Sutterfield, like Brenda Robinson, expressed that while they certainly appreciate this event and it's important to recognize teachers, that he said that from his perspective, teachers in Little Rock are always worried about the state control and the state takeover of the district, and he supports the union as it is now.
You noted in your report that the targets of these education activists, to a large part, is the Walton Family Foundation, which has poured a lot of money into charter schools. And where are things going at this point? There's still so much that is up in the air about the future of education and where state tax dollars will be going.
Well, based on literally sitting next to each other is Education Commissioner Johnny Key, Governor Hutchinson, and Kim Davis from the Walton Family Foundation, and a state board member, Vicki Sabers. We're all sitting together, so clearly they have a shared vision of promoting science, technology, engineering, and math, and things like charter schools, which Commissioner Key mentioned at least twice during his remarks. So it appears that the administration's pretty together on all this, and the Walton Family Foundation appears like they're part of it.
And of the four finalists for Teacher of the Year, when do we learn the winner?
We should learn the winner. We don't have a specific date. They said it'd be a surprise announcement in late fall. They're going to go visit those four teachers we mentioned at the beginning of this segment and see how they're doing in the classroom.
All right. Well, we'll have more on that coming up next month. You've been listening to KUAR's Weekend Review podcast, a look at the week's top stories in news, politics, and more. I'm Michael Hiplin.
I'm Jacob Kaufman.
I'm Sarah Weitz-Kotacek.
I'm Chris Hickey.
Chris, by the way, is the composer of our theme song. You can find us online at KUAR.org. KUAR is an editorially independent service of the University of Arkansas at Little Rock. We welcome your comments. Write to news@kuar.org. Thanks for listening.